hopeful of the future, hopeful for the future. Is that a redundancy? Can you be hopeful of the past? We got so much to talk about today. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, inviting you to take a look at life through the oldest of all Christian traditions, namely Armenian Orthodoxy. Take an Armadox look. This is episode number 515 of The Next Step, and I'm inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our 10th year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life. Since 2008, these Next Steps have been taken toward and for the disenfranchised members of the church community, as well as for those searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, as well as for the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Time travel. Time travel. Traveling through time. All kinds of things. Oh, you're saying, wait a minute, wait. This is April 24th, commemoration time. This is not time for travel, but this is time to commemorate. How about if I told you here's an opportunity to look at commemoration via time travel? And I did it. I traveled in time. No. I know. Okay, let me back up, okay? Hold it. Okay, we got way ahead of ourselves. Time travel. Let's start off with just that concept, time travel. H.G. Wells, right? The time machine. You're talking over 100 years ago, writing a story, science fiction, the time machine. You know, back in the 60s, there was a great, great show. I believe it was by the same people who put out Lost in Space. By the way, Lost in Space is just resurrected on Netflix, and I'm itching to get a chance to watch it. I haven't had 2 minutes of time just to sit down and watch it. But there was a show called Time Travel, right? The Time Tunnel, that's it. Yeah, thank you. Time Tunnel. That was a great, great show. It was about these two scientists who would actually, I think it was in New Mexico, they had developed this time tunnel, and you actually go back into time. Now, I don't remember if you can go forward in time. I don't know if that was part of the show, but I do know that you go back in time because these two scientists, they were lost in the infinite corridors of time, if I remember the way it was articulated, the infinite corridors of time. Wow, that's beautiful, very poetic, right? Okay, so these two time travelers would go and they'd end up in different time periods, and they'd one particular episode that comes to my mind, they stumble and they actually like fall into these areas through the time tunnel, and they were there on the deck of the Titanic. And so now you have interesting plots that can be developed. Okay, you're from the future. You know that the ship you're on is about to sink. How do you convince people that you know something that they don't know? You know that this ship is going to sink and they better listen to you and steer clear. Well, once they do that, the rest of history then changes. And I'm sure that you know about all different kinds of things, some of the problems, the metaphysical problems of time travel. Like if you go and you happen to kill your grandfather, this is a very common, it's one of those, no, killing your grandfather's not, no, stop it. No, this is one of those common conundrums, questions about time travel, metaphysical questions. If you were to go back in time and meet your grandfather and somehow killed him, what would happen to you? Well, obviously there'd be no parents, there'd be no father that you'd have or mother that you'd have, and therefore you would have no being. You would basically fade away. And these are problems that metaphysicians talk about. Is that the right word? Metaphysicians. Let's use it. I love that word, okay? Okay, we're not going to be talking about these kind of spooky things. We're going to talk about an actual time travel that I participated in. I went back in time. And we're talking about 100 years ago. We're talking about the time of the genocide. And to be able to meet somebody from the genocide. How about that? I'm saying all this because right now, next Tuesday is April 24th, and every year I get invited to a slew of places where I talk about the Armenian Genocide. I talk about different stories. I talk about my reflections. And I just recently did a talk at John Burroughs High School here in Burbank. And I have to tell you, I was impressed by the young people there. Their sharpness, their comprehension, their interest. It really left me hopeful. Well, it left me hopeful. No, you don't say hopeful for the future. That's redundant, isn't it? You're hopeful. What are you hopeful about? Hopeful for the past? No, you're hopeful for the future, of course. It left me hopeful. Okay. I want to share with you something that happened, a reflection that I had while talking to those young people, but also it's something that I cannot escape the last couple days, especially as I've been preparing for today's podcast. I said, you know, I have to share this with my podcast listeners, and I hope you enjoy it because it's going to go in a direction that is not science fiction, but it's true. It's something that I went through. It's an opportunity to go back into time, to meet people that you wish you had a chance to meet, but never had that opportunity. I am of a generation where my grandparents escaped a genocide. And one of the, probably I want to say the greatest treasures that I have from the past, let's qualify it, okay? One of the greatest treasures I have is that I sat down with my grandmother and I recorded her story. This is on cassette tape. In other words, audio. This is before videos, okay? I wish I had a video. I would love to see Grandma talking. But I do have her story, and it's a compilation of, I think it's about 7-8 hours of her talking. Her talking and sharing what life was like pre-1915, pre-genocide. What life was like during the genocide. What happened to her. The exile. Yeah, she was exiled. This word, Aksor. Aksor was the word for exile. It was part of her vocabulary during the Aksorutyun, during the exile. We were exiled from our house. We were forcibly ejected from where we lived. And she would talk, what happened to her during that time? Where did she go? What happened when she got there? These stories, I'm forever grateful that I have this small little recording. Now, fortunately, we do have many of these recordings from many of the survivors. When I say many, it's to the tune of 1,000. When you put it up against the 1.5 million people that were exiled, when you think about it in those terms, well, then it's less than 1%, right? It's a small, small little percentage of documentation that we have. But fortunately, we do have this documentation. And we're always very fortunate for whatever we do have. For instance, I've shared with you many times the book of Teotik. Teotik was a scribe who wrote about the Golgotha of the Armenian people. And in there he shared the martyrdom, the exile and the martyrdom of the clergy of 1915. And I think it was just maybe about, wow, it's already been about 25 years, over 25 years ago that I took that over one summer and actually entered each name and each place and each means of death into a database and came up with some statistics. Check out today's show notes. I'll make sure that there's a copy of that article. It appeared in Window. I want to say it was one of the first years that we put together Windows, probably issue number 3 or 4. Anyway, check out today's show notes and you'll find it. But Teotik, here's another scribe who at least documented. Now, this Monday evening at our Bible study, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take Teotic's work, which is up until this point has been this documentation of what happened to these clergymen. Now, guess what's happened to that book? It's become a book of the lives of the saints, right? Right? Think about it. If the martyrs have been canonized as saints, now those same stories have become the stories of the lives of the saints. So I'm going to be sharing that at our Bible study. In other words, we'll be talking about the saints of 1915 and referring to their stories. So that's going to be really exciting. I don't know if we'll get it. I know we'll be recording, and I know many of you have been asking about the Monday night Bible studies. There is I don't want to say it's a copyright problem, because it's all ours, but there is a small little glitch as far as getting it out, and it is a technical and a legal issue. We are working on it, and we will have those back up and around hopefully soon, but they do need your prayers and support. Anyway, that's the Monday night series. I digress, as I do so often, right? Don't tell people about that. Anyway, we were talking about the documentation and what happened to these people during their lives. Now, that one story, I'm very fortunate that I have of my grandmother. My other grandmother, my maternal grandmother, had a story that unfortunately I don't have documentation. I have a very short little clip of it, but I do remember many of the stories, and it is in this story as well. My maternal grandmother was one of six siblings, and during the genocide she actually lost one of her sisters. She became the older sister to the rest of the family, and so following the genocide she ends up in an orphanage where she is taking care of her other of her other siblings. And anyway, let me leave it at that. Okay, so we're going to talk about my maternal grandmother, who at the end of the genocide, this would be circa 1922-23, she is in an orphanage. She is with part of her siblings, and she is the oldest of the siblings, taking care of them. There is no mother, there is no father. They are left as orphans, obviously, as an orphanage would imply. Fast forward now, year 2006. I get invited to a place called Rwanda. My teacher from my instructor from USC calls me up many years later, and he says, "I know you work with genocide. Would you be interested in going to Rwanda?" This is Dr. Miller. And he says, "I'm taking a group of educators there. I would love to have you join us." So I said, "What would I do in Rwanda?" I mean, if you don't know where Rwanda is, take a map of Africa, put your finger right in the middle of the continent. That's where Rwanda is. Happens to be right on the equator too, which is really awesome too, if you happen to be there on the equinox, which I happen to be on March 20th. This is 2006. I went with this small group because for me, going to Rwanda in 2006 was an opportunity to see what might I find if I ended up in Armenia 1927. In other words, Rwanda had their genocide in 1994. I'm showing up 12 years later. What would it be like? What would I find in Armenia if I got there in 1927? Could Rwanda give me a clue? Could it give me maybe a looking glass into what I might find post-genocide in post-genocide Armenia? And it gave me more than a clue. It was an eye-opener. It was informative, and it was a life-changer. Particularly, and I've shared with you many, many stories throughout the year, and I won't belabor it. Hopefully, we'll get that out in a different form, an entire story of Rwanda. But I do want to go through one particular little episode. And this was after several days I had noticed, as going through Rwanda, I had noticed that there was no gray-haired people in Rwanda. Okay, now I'm in Rwanda 12 years after genocide. Well, why wouldn't there be gray-haired people? And we'll figure it out. Well, because everybody's been killed except little children somehow have survived, and these little children are now 10, 15, maybe 20 years old. Okay? And these are all orphans. Everywhere we're looking are orphans that have grown up. And it just occurred to me that there are no old people. There were no gray-haired people. So I asked about it, and they said, well, there is one little settlement, and they took us away with cars. I would say it was about a good half an hour, maybe an hour's trip from Kigali, the capital of Rwanda. And we got there, and we met with a group of widows who had been in this camp. I'd say there was about 200 of them, and we're standing up there, and we're talking, and these are all older people, gray-haired people. And there we learned why they were allowed to live, why they had turned into gray-haired people in this camp. In other words, why did they have age? These people were allowed to live because they were all infected with HIV/AIDS. If you've ever heard my live presentation, when I do presentations, I always put a picture of these widows up behind me as I'm speaking, because they are all raising their hands. It was just a moment that slaps you in the face and tells you, hey, this is real life. This is reality. Because these widows were all gathered, and the person who was with me was leading this group of educators that we were with. And he asked them, he says, how many of you are widows? They all raised their hands. How many of you have been infected with HIV/AIDS? And they raised their hands again, all of them. Well, that's why they were allowed to live. Because the only thing they could do was infect future populations. So it was basically by the perpetrator. When I talk about genocide, this is not war. This is about a systematic annihilation of the gene pool, getting rid of the genes. So by doing this, they had ensured not only that they would kill off the people at the time, but in the future, this group would infect future populations. And so basically, it could be a complete annihilation of a group of people. Systematic annihilation. Okay, when I talk about genocide, don't ever confuse it with war. With tragic as wars can be, genocide means, it is an orchestrated effort to eliminate a group of people. There is one little statement that I always, whenever I speak to young people, I always bring this up. It is by Talat Pasha, dated May 15th, 1915. It was several weeks after the start of the genocide. And he says, as I had communicated to you before, you will eliminate these people. And then he says, and if you are not going to follow these directions, then you are in the violation. You are in violation of the law. Well, what does that mean? It's not only okay to kill Armenians. It was mandated. You had to kill Armenians. You are told by the government that is your job, to go out there and kill Armenians. So it's much different, right? It's okay to kill Armenians, as horrible as that might be. But now you have a mandate. If you're going to function in this government, your job is to go out there and kill. Your job is to go out there and annihilate. Without regard to gender, to age, just take care of them. So we were in this group, and that same day we met with so many people, and that story in itself was a beautiful story. I, you know what? Check out today's show notes. There'll be links to the bigger story, but I want to get to the immediate story. We went on, and we met a small group of young people who had assembled, and they were witnessing to the power of forgiveness. Can you believe that? 12 years after the genocide, talking about forgiveness. And this is in 2006. This is when I was just flirting with the ideas of forgiveness on our end, because we were getting ready for a big conference coming up, coinciding with the dates 777. In other words, July 7th, 2007. So historically, in my own evolution, spiritual evolution, I was getting ready, and I made this trip to Rwanda, and I'm meeting with people who have not only talked about forgiveness, but were forgiving. I met one guy who was who watched his mother get raped. He was hiding under a couch, and he watched his mother get raped and then killed before his eyes. 12 years later, he's driving through the city of Kigali, now as a young man, 20 years old or so. He's driving a van through Kigali, and he sees the guy! He sees the guy who raped his mother and killed her! And he said, my first thing was, I just floored it. He says, I put my foot to the gas, and I'm gonna go get that guy. I'm going to go make sure that that guy is killed. It's finished. Revenge. And he says, I'm going down the hill, speeding up, pressing on the gas, ready to kill him because he's in the street. I'm driving my van. I'm going to get him. And he says, I get closer and closer. And the only thing I could do was to slam on the brakes. And he says, I got out at that point. I got down on my knees. And I realized that if I had done that, I was no better than him. I was basically allowing him to control the rest of my life. I would have been punished. The rest of my life would have been ruined. And the punishment is not only to be in jail. I would have had to have lived with the actions that I did. And he said that the only thing that I could do at that point was to forgive. Because in that forgiveness, it was not letting that other guy off the hook. It was letting myself off the hook. It was letting myself off the hook that I am not going to allow my past to dictate my future. My past is not going to tell me what I'm going to be doing in the future, who I am today. And so we were in this group of widows, and from there we passed on to this group of young people who were witnessing about the power of faith, about the power of God, about the power of forgiveness. And there, this young girl got up, and she was speaking. They asked her how old she was. If I remember right, she was 18 or 19 years old. And she started telling her story about how during the genocide, her parents were taken away. Her parents were killed. And she had 6 siblings, one of which died. And for the other 5 siblings, she was the oldest. And she needed to take care of those siblings. And so she was now with her friends as this young mother to her other siblings. And as she was talking, this young black lady, I realized that she was the same age as my grandmother was when she was left with her 5 siblings. And I looked at her, and except for the color of her skin, there was no difference between her and the story that my grandmother said. There was no difference between her and my grandmother. And throughout that entire trip, I realized that this was a time travel. This was nothing about getting into a machine. This was not about going backwards. This was about allowing our hearts, allowing our minds to explore other people, to go beyond the boundaries that we've set up for ourselves. There are no boundaries except the ones and the limitations that we have set up for ourselves. Get rid of those. And what do you see? All of a sudden you see people. You see people who are just like you and me. And there, in this small little camp, with all these young people around me, with the older widows behind me, I met my grandmother. I time traveled. I met my grandmother. There she was, this young little girl, frightened, yes, because she had seen those atrocities, but at the same time, tough, ready to take on the world, ready not to abandon her siblings, but to take on the new challenges of what the day will bring, of what life will bring, putting away the past and realizing that, yes, this has happened and I cannot change it, but what I can do is not allow that past to rule who I am today and allow me to get beyond today and allow me to define my today, define my tomorrow. And that's what my grandmother did with her life. She went on from that orphanage. She went on to come to America. She met my grandfather, another orphan of the genocide. They got married here in America. I couldn't believe that. I found that out only several years ago. I found that out. I didn't know that as we were growing up. You just assume grandparents came as a set, right? Two orphans finding each other in orphanages here in America. Thank God that America opened its arms to us. Thank God that it didn't say that, you know, we're closing it off. Thank God that there was that Statue of Liberty. Give me your huddled masses. Thank God that America opened its doors to us. Thank God that Armenians had a place to go. And so my grandmother started her life with her husband, my grandfather. They had their kids, my mom, my aunt, my uncle. They had their kids. Life continued, and here we are, over 100 years later, realizing an event that took place could have destroyed our life, but it didn't. The event that took place over 100 years ago has molded us into who we are. And now we need to start talking about what's in front of us. And helping, reaching out to people who have gone through that same path. That's going to be section 2 of today's podcast. But for right now, we always take a break. Right about now, sometimes it gets emotional like it did right now. I think a little gomidas is appropriate for today and not so sad. But I want to share with you. This is off of the 10 Revelations Gomidas CD that came out several years ago. This one is called Sweet Spring, Anushkarun. Gomidas. Thank you.
Անուշկարում ծաղիմ գբով խոչ, զվարտարում կայտար խոչ, կանաչ տալար ծիծաղ ծողիկ, վհտաղ դալար, դու ուրդողի։
Off of the 10 Revelations Gomidas CD, this is Anushka Arun. I thought it was a nice little song to play today, especially appropriately Gomidas, as we're thinking about genocide and the aftermath of genocide. Gomidas in himself, a unique story of what happens, the consequences of the horrors that we bring upon ourselves as human beings. And that's really going to be the part two of today's show. And I do want to share that with you, a little bit of insight, a little bit different for today. I know when we get close to April 24th, everybody gives you the usual cliches. I hope that I've been able to at least start off today's show with a different cliche. With time travel, we're going to be going in another direction in the second portion of today's show. Right now, we paused for a song of the day, Gomidas, Anushka Arun, Sweet Spring, off of the 10 Revelations CD. There will be a link on today's show notes so you could check out this song as well as all the great music they put together.
Well, I saw a bird today flying from above. And the wind blew it away. And the black-eyed mother sun scores the butterfly blade. Velvet veined, I saw it burn.
That is a requiem. Love that song. We don't get to play requiems anymore on April 24th because we have beatified, we have canonized the martyrs of 1915. So they are no longer victims, but rather they are victors. And there needs to be a celebration of their lives. And it's very difficult when people try to bring about this story that supposedly, the world owes us something. The world doesn't owe anybody anything. But I do want to talk about maturing in our faith and maturing in our understanding of who we are. And it goes with this entire idea of who owes what. You know, if you come into any circumstance thinking that somebody owes you something, you're up for failure. You're up for disappointment. It's not going to happen. Nobody owes you anything. Nobody owes anybody anything. We give because we have love in our hearts. We give because we understand that part of, now listen to this word, the mature understanding of life is to give. And I want to talk about that maturity, that symbol, that sense of maturity. Do you remember when you were a child, what did you do? You would blame others for your problems, right? Think about it in these terms. You get caught by your parents doing something wrong. Let's go for the obvious, right? The one that hurts, playing with fire. You're there with a buddy, a friend, and you're playing with matches because those are fun things to do. You strike one and all of a sudden a little flame comes out and mom comes over and says, "What are you doing? You do not play with matches," and slaps your little fingers. What do you do? Well, your friend's right next to you, and you say, this is, in Armenian, there's a word, gumgamal. It's like, I like it because it's anakanapia, right? It's like your gums are melting into each other. There's no, you're trying to weasel out of it, okay? Let's say you're weaseling out of it, and you say, "Well, it wasn't just me." And if you're a little bit more forward and aggressive, you could say, "It wasn't me." Take the just out. It was my friend who made me do it. And this is old as Adam and Eve, right? With God finds Adam and he's walking through the forest, through the Garden of Eden, and he's got fig leaves, and he says, "Who told you you were naked? Well, did you eat of the tree?" "Yes, I did. Yes, I did, but it wasn't me. The woman made me do it." "Woman, who made you do it?" "The serpent made me do it." And, of course, this is very symbolic of what we always do, too, right? If we can't find a scapegoat, who do we say? We say, "The devil made me do it." And there are scapegoats throughout history. Throughout history, we find these scapegoats. And, unfortunately, these scapegoats become the people who we target and we align our hatred towards. Armenians were scapegoated for many of the problems that were happening in the Ottoman Empire. They became the scapegoats. Instead of saying we have problems that we have brought upon ourselves, there's a group over there. Right now in America, immigrants are scapegoated, right? Okay, we have many problems, many difficulties, but you find the immigrant population and you find these weak people. In Christianity, who was the ultimate scapegoat? Judas, remember? Yeah, because he gave a kiss to Jesus and betrayed him. Now, it doesn't matter that scripture says he repented, right? Doesn't matter. No, he's the scapegoat. He's the bad guy. And it's okay. You can hate Judas because he betrayed the Lord. Despite that, St. Paul says every time that you don't do the good, every time you dishonor people, you are dishonoring Jesus and you are betraying the Lord. You yourself are the Judas. No. Judas. He is the manifestation of that betrayal, and so it's okay for us to scapegoat. He's the scapegoat over there. Judas, if that's not enough, what do we do? In some of the Christian traditions, not in the Armenian Church, by the way, but in most mainline Christian traditions which have the Nicene Creed, they have added the name of Pontius Pilate. Right? They talk about Jesus who was baptized in the River Jordan, who grew up and he started his ministry. And then they say, and who suffered under Pontius Pilate. And it's interesting for me because, first of all, it's not in the Armenian. When we recite the Nicene Creed, his name isn't mentioned. But why aren't you mentioning the other people that you can scapegoat to, right? Why don't you say who was betrayed under Judas, who suffered under Pontius Pilate, but who was handed over to you by the Jewish Sanhedrin, right? We don't include those. For some reason, there are people that are exempt from the scapegoating process. But here's what I want to share with you. If we can all understand that these are stories in which we should be plugging ourselves into, we understand that you cannot scapegoat. And the maturity of faith comes when you understand that you are part of the entire story. And this is really important. This maturity is very important because it allows us to transform religion into something that becomes accessible, that becomes relatable, that becomes relative to our life. Think about it in these terms, okay? Judas, we know, is the betrayer. Who really betrayed Jesus? Okay, yeah, Judas came and gave him a kiss. Do you think that if he didn't, Jesus wouldn't have been betrayed somewhere else? Well, how about if we fast forward 2,000 years now? Do we betray Jesus? Of course we do. When we don't love, when we don't have compassion, when we don't share with one another, we become betrayers of Christ today. Because the Christ that we're talking about is not just a figure in first century Palestine, but he is a figure that guides our life every single moment, every single day, and should be guiding it if that religion is relevant. I'm not here to serve a history lesson. I'm here to make that religion, that faith, that Christ alive in our lives today. And our lives is the operative. I'm not going to scapegoat and say, "Hey, my friend made me do it. Judas made him do it. Judas was the bad guy. The Pontius Pilate." No. I have betrayed Christ. Because the other side of this is just as important. Remember during the time of Ostvazadzin, when we talk about St. Mary bringing Christ into the world. Well, St. Mary is not just a figure of the first century, but also we are St. Mary's. We are invited to bring Christ into the world, to bring his love, to bring his passion, his compassion into this world. And the same holds true for the story that we find ourselves in this weekend, namely the genocide story, April 24th, 1915. Yeah, you can scapegoat it and say that, yeah, this is a horrible thing that Turkey did. But what are you doing today that is no different than what most of the world did back then? For instance, what do I mean by that, okay? 1915 to 1918, this is a proven matter of record. The first 3 years of the Armenian Genocide, there was more written in American newspapers than... More written, yes. New York Times, Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, LA Times, whatever was around at that time, okay? There was more written about the Armenian genocide than there were during the first 3 years of Darfur. Darfur is a genocide that's taking place right now. It's occurring right now, yeah. We have stories that are taking place in Myanmar. We have stories that are taking place in Syria right now. And what do? We focus on something that happened 103 years ago. Absolutely, that happened. There is no denying of that. But in the time it takes for us to refer to that event, we are losing sight of what's going on in the world today. What are we doing? Are we staying quiet as the rest of the world stayed quiet towards us? In other words, the Armenian story of 103 years ago, the Armenian genocide, gives us an opportunity for us to connect with our humanity, namely for all the world. Namely, as Armenians, we have an obligation to others because we've been on the hurting end. We have received the neglect. There was more written about our genocide than there was today priorities, with all the means that we have today. There was more written back then. And yet, what did the world do? Three monkeys, right? Close their eyes, close their ears, close their mouth. And what are we doing? Are we playing that same monkey game today? Are we talking about what's going on in Syria? Are we talking about what's going on in our backyard? Last year, we went up to North Dakota. We stood up with the tribes over there at Standing Rock. Are we talking about that? Are you talking about what's going on in your own backyard? Where we're trying to create divisions among people. Are we the people who are willing to stand up today and say, because it happened to us in 1915, we have an obligation today to make a difference in our world? I'll tell you, I've been trying for years. We've been doing this under the In His Shoes banner. We've been going out and we've been feeding homeless. And one of the most gratifying things that occurs now between our Ascensia feeds, between the Verdugo's family promise, we're up to about two or three feeds a month for the homeless. Sometimes it gets three in the month. And we've actually put in a petition now for a fourth and fifth. Now, what's important about that? You're saying, okay, well, what's the big deal? You're feeding homeless. We do that too. We write, yeah, that's beautiful. I'm glad you're doing it. We're doing this in the name of the Armenian people to make a point to say that, yes, in 1915, there was this horrendous event called the genocide, and we were left homeless. And this is really, really important because this is the leveraging of love. You see, we may not be able to change the big things in life using the conventional methods that we have. And God knows we've tried, right? You go and you bomb people, and then how about leveraging the power of love by doing the good and using that as a lever? Who was it? Aristotle, who said that, you know, give me a lever long enough and I could move the world. Well, you can move these things. You can leverage it. And that's where that power comes. That's where the power of Christianity comes in. Because we've been given this power of love, of forgiveness, of understanding that the past is past and we have to deal with today. Yesterday, I was on a panel discussion with some great, great panelists, and we talked about a lot of these things, about these concepts. And one thing that occurred to me is, as we were talking about these things, for many people in the audience, it was their first time hearing concepts of forgiveness in connection with April 24th. We got incredible applause, people right on, you know, thumbs up and appreciation, but it doesn't sink in because it's not just a 5-minute little lesson that you can get. It's a lifetime. It's a lifetime of commitment. And that's what I invite you to do when you get involved with us, what the Armadoxy is. It's a study. It's a study of yourself within your faith, within Armenian Orthodoxy, to understand how that pans out. Now, you can't do it in a couple seconds. You can't do it in a couple minutes. It's not about a couple hours. It's not about getting this podcast, downloading it, and saying, okay, this is it. But to understand, to take the time to meditate, to pray, to be in dialogue, and to really explore the dimensions of faith and realize that you are part of the bigger story. You are part of that history. You are part of this world. I'm going to take a break right now and come back with some vital, vital news, because you're saying, like, wait a minute, what day is it? We'll answer that question and a lot more right after Susie makes this announcement.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the 10th year of producing shows, which are heard around 6 continents. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Okay, thank you, Susie. Susie has abandoned me. She is out in Florida today, and we are actually a little bit behind in schedule, and this is the first time that this has happened in the 10 years we've been podcasting. We get the podcast out right on the day, on Thursday. Sometimes we've gone up against the midnight schedule, and we've justified it because we said, even though we're on Pacific time, we said, well, in Hawaii, it is still yesterday. So we justified. This time we are a full day late, and our apologies, but it's also an opportunity for us to ask you for your prayers. It is really, really incredibly busy. The demands that are put on our time, on our abilities, and we need your help right now. We need your prayers right now for God's guidance and assistance. We are looking for people who are willing to take on some of these tasks that we have, but at the same time, to organize those tasks, it's taking us some time. So please be patient. We thank you for your prayers, for your support for this ministry. You are the ones who tell us how it touches you, and we always appreciate the feedback that you provide us, because it's that relationship that we have. We may not know each other face to face. If I saw you on a street, may not know you, but we do know each other through this podcast, through the letters that you send us, the emails, the texting that goes on, the tweets that retweet our podcast, the Facebook posts. Everything. It's a wild world we live in, and I'm very thankful that we're here, and I'm very thankful for the relationship that we have with one another. I thank God for that, and I ask for your prayers, especially this week as we get ready. I have been on a circuit. I've been speaking at so many different places, and I have a few more heading up to Boise, Idaho tomorrow. community up there that has not had a priest, they say, between 8 to 10 years. I will be the first Armenian priest to get there in the last 8 to 10 years. And you can imagine spiritually how uplifting it is for me, a priest, to be able to deliver the sacrament and to deliver the gospel in an area, Boise, Idaho, which up until now, I have to admit that I think of potatoes when I think of Idaho. So we'll go see. Looking forward to that. This Tuesday night, I'm going to be at the Western Diocese. I'm the homilist for the April 24th event. There is an interesting story that I'm going to be revealing. I wrote about it. I'll put a link on today's show notes. You could read about it. It's about His Holiness of Blessed Memory, Vazgen I, and his first visit. I was there. His first visit to the Armenian Martyrs Monument. So a lot of stuff going on, and we just thank you for being with us. And please keep those prayers going, and please stay in touch. My email address is feedback@epostle.net. Epostle means apostolic evangelism for an expanding and electronic universe. So until next week, I want to thank you for joining us. Please join us at all the usual spots, social media, and of course at the mothership, inissues.org. On behalf of the wonderful crew who brought you today's show, Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take care, Brass Cat out!